Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Baby, do you understand me now? Yes, sometimes I seem a little mad. But don't you know that no life can always be an angel? And when things go wrong, I seem a little mad.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
Bill Graham.
Woo!
Shit, I should have said greetings.
You son of a bitch. And today, to help us talk about Arrival, the newest film from Denis Villeneuve, we have Dan Gavazdin.
I'm still trying to figure out why you chose this music. It's just not hitting me yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's very subtle. It's super
yeah,
subtle.
Yeah, I can't figure it out.
Oh, my God. It's like that time that I chose I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It to talk about Handmaiden. Sometimes the subtleties are lost on people. So as I said, today our review will be of Arrival, the newest film by Denis Villeneuve, who's previously done Sicario, Enemy, and Prisoners, and this stars Amy Adams. Before we get into that, all the usual rigmarole, you should follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, follow us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show, email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com, and of course, because it's Christmas season, no one's going to fight me on that this time, I see. You should go on iTunes and gift us a comment and a rating. We really appreciate it. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Woo!
Woo!
I think I finally caught up on lack of sleep from all the trauma earlier this week.
Yeah, you missed our roundtable discussion where we were basically just like...
We were punch drunk.
Half dead, punch drunk, trying to talk about things and ultimately failing. I do think, however, that we have a movie today that seems perfectly positioned to seize the zeitgeist of this moment. And that, of course, is Arrival. Before we jump into our review, though, let me remind you that we are brought to you today by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. Every day, Mubi's curators pick one film to feature, and you will have 30 days to watch that film before it disappears into the ether. During that time, you can watch as many times as you want. You can download it to your device to watch on the go when you're away from Wi-Fi and data. And, yeah, movies awesome, guys, because as we all know, Netflix is just a logjam of DTV shit. And Hulu is losing its criterion. So, like, what are we doing here? Get on it. Get on Mubi. Go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you can get from us, because we love you, 30 days free of Mubi. That's again, mubi.com/filmstage. Before we get into Arrival, I wanted to take a quick second to plug a movie that I saw that I quite enjoyed, and this is The Monster. Has anyone else had the opportunity to see The Monster yet?
No. Which film is that?
It's The Monster by Brian Bertino. I had talked about it a little while ago. And it's finally out in theaters now. It's an A24 release, but it's one of their smaller ones. It's also on VOD on DirecTV. And this is about a mother and daughter who get trapped in their car on a lonely country road and who are beset upon by a monster. It's a pretty simple
premise. Only place that's showing it is nearly an hour from me, and I'm in a major metropolitan city.
Yes, you're in Chicago, a major metropolitan city. That is sad, because The Monster is a super good movie. Just from a thriller standpoint, it's quite solid. But I'll tell you this. Zoe Kazan, who plays the really wretched alcoholic mother in this movie, is incredible. And Ella Ballantyne, who plays Lizzie, the daughter, I gotta look this up. I gotta figure out how old this girl is, because she is incredible in this. Like, the scenes of her and her mother together are just, they're harder to watch than the scenes that actually involve the monster. These are, without a doubt, two of the best performances that you will see this year. So, if you are living in a city that has the monster, if you have DirecTV, or just keep an eye out for when it comes on VOD, The Monster is a tiny little movie with a pretty awesome premise and a really cool looking practical monster, and it is anchored by two of the most emotionally raw performances that I've ever seen that lead to one of the more devastating mother-daughter relationships ever put on film. So
interesting.
Yes, I was just
a lot of praise.
Yes, I'm super into this movie, and I know no one else is talking about it, so I wanted to give it a little plug. So go out and find The Monster. It is worth your time. And if it's something that you don't like, I will let you punch me in the face. Please don't lie about that just because you want to punch me, because I only gave Moonlight a B-.
Are you gonna fly me there too?
What was that?
Are you going to pay for my airfare there?
No, you gotta do that.
Oh, well.
Is there something about the monster, just watching it, that you would say is why A24 is releasing it in such a limited fashion? Is it like such a specifically niche title, or
I honestly don't know, because, and I was saying this as I was watching it, this seems like one of those things that you could put a fair amount of, or not even a fair amount, just a decent amount of advertising behind, and it would open to probably more than it cost to make, because it's got a horror movie thing to it. But maybe we're just beyond that now. I really don't know why A24 is treating it like this. It's kind of disappointing, because usually A24 is all about it. I think maybe it's just a little more genre than they want. Maybe they just had too much wrapped up with all the other great films they're putting out. Again, I don't work for A24. I don't know. It's really strange that they're kind of limiting it like this. So that's why I'm going to do the job that they're not and tell people to go see The Monster. But that's that for the thoughts on The Monster. Now it's time to get into our feature review, which is of Arrival. Again, the newest film from Denis Villeneuve, the director of Sicario. This was written by Eric Heisserer, based off of the short story of Your Life by Ted Chiang. And it stars Amy Adams, Forest Whitaker, and Jeremy Renner. Here is the trailer.
There are days that define your story beyond your life. Like the day they arrived.
What might be called first contact. The objects measure at least...
I'm Colonel G.T. Weber from Army Intelligence.
Pack your bags. You're at the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations.
Priority one. What do they want? Where are they from? You'll be reporting to me, but you'll be working with him when you're in the show.
That's what they call him, the UFO.
So that is the trailer for Arrival. This movie focuses on Louise Banks, Dr. Louise Banks, played by Amy Adams, who is a specialist on language, who is brought in by the military to help them communicate with an alien race that has landed 12 ships in various places all across the globe to hopefully figure out their intentions. I guess that's enough setup. Let's just jump in. Dan Gvasdin, you are here because you specifically told me, if you love this film and you need a contrary voice, have me on. And I trust your opinion to an extent most times. We've done enough podcasts and stuff and known each other long enough that I believe you can make a good case for this. So I want you to kick us off. What did you think of Arrival?
Well, this is going to be hard to start this off, because I think I like this film a good deal. My reaction to it, seeing it, and I saw it before everybody else did a couple weeks ago, is I thought it was an okay to good film, and I'm seeing people all across the internet hail it as this masterpiece, of science fiction cinema. And, you know, I don't want to be super negative on it because I think this is kind of the film that we desire seeing all the time, these adult, thoughtful, films, with a big budget behind it, or at least a larger budget than I guess like most adult dramas receive these days. It's the kind of thing that I should be super ecstatic about, but I find myself pulling back from that, and I felt it throughout the movie. Was it's just short of where I want it to be, and I think the problem comes down to the third act of the film. And I know we're not really in spoilers right now, so I don't really want to get into specific details, but mainly that I think there, all the scenes in this film and all the individual elements are really interesting and kind of beautiful. But as a whole, I don't really think the story holds up. It comes together in the way that it would want to. And it goes for a very strong emotional ending. And I felt completely detached from that because I felt like it was either maybe not out of nowhere, but that the rest of the movie was not spent servicing that ending enough for it to earn the big emotional heights that it's going for. So I would recommend this film to people. In fact, I would tell people to go see it in a theater, if only to support this kind of cinema. But I just don't think that it is the masterpiece that I imagine maybe somebody on here. I don't know how you guys feel, so it's hard for me to react. But do you guys feel like this is like the great sci-fi film that we're looking for?
Well, let's find out. Michael Snydell, what were your thoughts on Arrival?
Well, Dan, to speak specifically to what you're saying, because my opening thoughts are kind of echo that a little bit, but are a little bit more positive in the sense of, I think that if you start taking this film as a whole and looking at the arc at at face value, you're going to potentially have some problems with this movie. But while I do not think this is a masterpiece, I think that this is a very interesting case of where structure is what allows this movie to succeed as much as it does. Mm-hmm. And I obviously will get into more of the specifics of structure, but the way that this film plays with the magnificence of, just what a build can be, and then starts swerving off while also making that still feel like the fabric of the same film, I think is really fascinating. And I was emotionally there as much as I was catching myself saying, wait, I need to think about this more afterwards. So, this is a really fascinating film. And I know that doesn't feel like a very substantial view of it, but
well, it's gonna again, be hard for us to really give our sure. substantial view until we go into spoilers, which
no, I mean, that's fair. I think what is interesting is, Villeneuve, how did you pronounce it,
Brad? I don't know. I just kind of slur the end of it and hope that no one corrects
me. Just call him Denis V.
Yeah. All right, Denis V. All right, let's go with Denis V.
Villeneuve, I think, is how it goes. But I know people say Villeneuve. I don't know.
Well, Denis V and cinematographer Bradford Young, they bring such an austere touch to this movie that is at its core so emotional. So again, yeah, you can't really talk specifically about logistic, confusions and things like that. But, it would be easy for me to be like, the first hour of this is excellent or verging on a masterpiece, which is what some people have said. But I think taken as a full experience, it's a little bit more, removed than I like with scripts and narratives, but I find it very interesting to dissect. That's what I would say.
Okay. Bill Graham, what about yourself?
So for me, I think first and foremost, this film, again, it is under that 2 hour mark that I harp on so much. I have to say that out of the way, get that out
Son
of the way.
Of a bitch.
Yes. So
that's an
check
automatic
mark there.
1.5 stars from Bill Graham.
Yes. Yes. Anyways, moving on to more pressing matters. The film is absolutely gorgeous. I think if you've seen Denis V's other films, you know that he has a certain distinct style that is very kind of grounded in just dark earth tones and things like that. He loves those tones. And there's a scene when you see the spaceship for the first time with these rolling clouds over this mountain range kind of or hilltop area that is just absolutely stunning. This film just visually is so lush and just so beautiful. And it really feels like all of the little nuances of how the government works, of how they would strategically set up a perimeter around this one of is that a spoiler? One of 12, I guess?
No, that's no.
Yeah. One of 12 alien objects that have landed on Earth, and how the governments of our world all kind of go about trying to figure out what this means, what's going on, everything like that. So I think visually this film, and this is definitely his biggest budget film, I would probably say. And you can tell, I mean, the amount of money spent on just helicopters alone has to be just absurd. This
helicopter
film
budget was through the roof.
Yeah. This film definitely brings that kind of next level of, okay, what would this actually look like? And it puts it up on screen. There aren't any kind of shortcuts or things like that it feels like. They're not making this small kind of, even though it is a very small insular film, they're not trying to rob you of any of kind of the visual flair that you would expect from a film like this with the subject matter that it's dealing with. That being said, I think definitely this film has a quiet kind of complexity that can leave probably a lot of audience members really confused by the end of it. I would say most people, if you're paying a good amount of attention, this is a film when you walk out of it, more than likely you're going to turn to the person that you're with, or, you know, you may text some friends who have seen it or tell some friends to go see it and then tell you when they've seen it so you can talk to them afterwards. Because this is definitely a film that kind of should inspire some conversations, which for me, I think is the loftiest goal for any film, is to actually have a conversation about the film after you watch it. It's not just like, oh, okay, so that's done. All right, so where are we going to go eat dinner? You know, it's like, no, this is a film that should inspire a lot of conversation about how our government deals with certain things, how language interacts with people and things like that. So I think in that sense, it's absolutely a success. Within that, I think the film definitely has its moments. For me, this is everything that Interstellar wanted to be that didn't quite execute. For me, that just simply means that even though this film doesn't have the emotional core that a lot of Nolan films are also lacking, this film still it almost doesn't seem like it's asking you to react in that way. It manages to sidestep some of the emotion to just simply put you in awe. And I think that's kind of the real success of this film, is that it's not trying to go for emotional stakes so much as it's just trying to make a point and kind of leave you with some thoughts and some ideas that are really kind of searching and for each person that watches this film, they're probably going to take something else away from it. So, very, very enjoyable, really well acted. I love the music from Johan Johansson. And the creatures are, you know, I'd say a B. Yeah.
Okay. Now I kind of want to know what did we all think of the aliens before we get into my general all around opinion? Were we all satisfied with the biology of the creatures?
I think it's interesting, but I don't know. Has anybody here read the short story?
I have not.
I have not read it.
I wanted to.
Well, in the short story, the aliens have eyes that circle their whole head, and the idea being that they have no concept of forward. It is all circular. Like, I think that's really interesting. I would have liked to have seen that.
So they have
on the screen
100 eyes arrayed around their head, or they have a single striped eye around their head.
No, it's like a bunch of eyes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, the short story is very different than this.
I think that would work better on the page, honestly.
Yeah sure. Yeah. I would be curious what that looked like, but I was satisfied with how they looked here. They're so alien, yet they're kind of like deep sea creatures. There's like an inherent repulsion to them. That you have, like, you're inherently scared of them, and I think that's an interesting thing that the film does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have an otherworldly physicality that I really liked. Even up until like the end of the film, I was like, that, I still don't get it, and it's still really unnerving to look at them. As for my all around thoughts on this film, I am super close to deploying the M word. That all movie reviewers have to shoot at least a couple times a year. I don't know if I'm ready. I haven't said it out loud yet.
Are we talking about Voldemort? Is that what you're talking about?
Why would I say the M word if I meant Voldemort?
I don't know.
Don't say his name, Brian.
Just the Mort part.
I really can't get away from Harry Potter anywhere on the internet, can I?
No, Bill Graham, you for some reason the last couple of days have really been leaning on Harry Potter, and I'm concerned that the upcoming Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them has influenced your brain. But I will say that this movie is, first and foremost, like, you can't even deny this, it's gorgeous. It's amazing. Bradford Young, the cinematographer, who also did A Most Violent Year, Selma, and Ain't Them Body Saints. This guy is just like, incredible. This guy's amazing. And there's like no getting away from that. I cannot wait. He's like almost 40, I think. And I can't wait for the next like 40 years of his career just to see what he does. Denny V, I guess, is what we're going to call him now. Denny V is a visual stylist that is at once accessible and deeply like intellectual and well thought out and complex. And that's, I think, one of the greatest things you can say about him, is that he does things that won't alienate a general viewership, but that still hold the deep meaning that some other flashier camera work will attempt to do. And I think that his direction and his allowance for his actors to underreact and not have to have the, you know, tears and snot streaming out of the eyes, crying and screaming moments that other directors will go for as a visual shorthand for emotion is really important. I've yet to dislike a single film of his. I even have a soft spot for Prisoners, which I know is sometimes a controversial opinion. Until this point, thought that, however, he was just going to be the plot guy, the story guy. He had never really moved me in an emotional way. Enemy was, and still remains, one of my favorite films in recent memory. But that's all an intellectual exercise. And then Sicario is like pure thriller with some interesting ideas sprinkled in, but again, purely academic. Prisoners is an airport novel, given like a European art house sheen and a little bit of a weird war on terror metaphor. which again is fine, but not really anything that's going to tug at the heartstrings. This movie, however, I think he's sidestepped the problem that a lot of people have with Nolan, where every time Nolan tries to do something with a little bit of heart, it comes off like an algorithm attempting to make a facsimile of human emotion that'll still work. And I say this as someone who loved Interstellar and still gives our editor-in-chief crap for not having it on our 50 best sci-fi of the new century list, even though the goddamn Matrix sequels went on there. And Jordan, I know you're going to listen to this, and I'm still angry. But but I will say that Arrival is able to, and Dan, I think we're going to start disagreeing soon, artfully weave in all of the emotion throughout the story and really drive it home, not out of nowhere or as like a matter of case on the outskirts, but really is an essential part of the narrative. And I was not expecting that from Denis V. I think that it's pretty impressive that he was able to do that. And I think it's weird because I almost wanted to say, like, should we say that this movie has like an emotional story at its core? Because from the trailers and everything, you get like no concept of that.
It's far more character based than it looks.
Yeah. Like in the trailers, it really does seem like, oh, okay, it's just like a first contact story, and it's going to be cool visuals and weird ideas. And the type of dry, staid science fiction that people who call themselves true science fiction fans love. I keep thinking of, if you ever watched the television show Party Down, where one of the main characters, I can't remember his name now, Roman, he is a scriptwriter who tries to write hard science fiction. And what he means by that is impenetrable dialogue and characters that are not human beings. They like just make no sense. They're just terrible. They're awful. And this movie is a truly human story told using science fiction elements, not just as plot, but also as part of their emotional narrative. So, I would say that this is something of a masterpiece. I'm going to do it. I'm going to deploy the M word. It's out there.
Now ready for the pushback.
Well,
you know, Dan, it's funny because you seem pretty positive on this film, and you said that people should go see it. At the same time, it's like, this movie's going to be for you what Moonlight was for me, I feel. Because no one was talking about the problems that I saw with Moonlight, so I had to say them. And then that didn't give me enough good time to say all the good things, even though I continuously tried to. And then someone yelled at me for not liking Moonlight. So, I just got like...
I like this movie. I think the M word is not justified.
And that's fine.
You know, before you went and saw this movie, I asked you, what did you feel about the ending of Lost? Because I think that will be very determinant about how you feel about this movie.
What?
Agreed. Agreed.
No. See, I would agree with you, Dan. Only if you remove the fact that Lost ran for like 6 seasons.
Right, so Lost was able to build its characters up and give them, you know, even though people found its ending that said it was all about the characters and their emotions, despite the fact that they've been inconsistently written for 6 seasons, like you're supposed to feel like that's the ending instead of any reveal about what's actually been going on and what we spent 6 seasons on, right. Satisfying. Like that's the breakdown, I think, of where people, they land on either side of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the same is true of this movie, and it's funny that you bring up Prisoners because there's a scene in that movie where they go into this house and they discover these patterns on the wall and snakes in trunks.
Yeah.
That has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie and the rest of the story. And for me, Arrival is like that scene, but for an hour and a half of the movie.
But that's crazy because if it's that much of the movie, then it's obviously a part of the movie.
Yeah.
Hold on.
And I found the snake scene enjoyable.
Okay.
But I have no idea what it has to do with what Prisoners is trying to do. In the same way, I don't understand what the aliens have anything to do with the point that Arrival is trying to make.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump to you, but I just wanted to say, I wanted to clarify my Lost statement. Lost was 6 to 7 years of people's lives. This is less than 2 hours, which Bill has pointed out. And I think that to that end, you have time in real time to understand what this movie is doing and adjust yourself accordingly. Whereas Lost, like, was a healthy chunk of people's life and they had a reason to be mad. So imagine if Lost was 2 hours that happened all at once and it didn't feel like sometime during the third season they were like, oh shit, we're never going to be able to deliver. We got to start making this about the characters.
Again, I like this movie. I'm just pushing back on the masterpiece thing, and I'm far more angry about Lost than I am about this movie.
Well, okay. Bill Graham, what were you going to say?
I was going to say we are bordering very heavily on spoiler territory at this point.
That's why I was going to say right after you're done, we should get into spoilers. So if that's all you were going to say, then yeah. No one's saying – I'm sorry, were you not going to just say that?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, cool.
I tried to avoid specifics.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I'm pretty sure we avoided specifics. The other great thing is that to spoil this movie, I feel like it's not just like, oh, and then you find out they're all vampires. Like, that's not the spoiler. And obviously that's not the spoiler for this movie. But, like, you couldn't let the spoiler for this movie slip because it involves a lot of explanation. So if someone spoils this movie for you, they had to really go out of their way to do it.
There are movies you could drop and people would know.
I guess.
Yes.
So,
well, let's try it out right now. Let's spoil it and see if it really lands.
After we do the spoiler jump, we're all going to have 2 seconds each to try to spoil this movie as thoroughly as possible. But before we do that,
that's easy.
So we all agree that this is a movie people should go out and see.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is heady sci-fi that a lot of people ask for and rarely receive. This is like take down the action scene of District 9. This is what this is, right? Like, this is heady sci-fi that people can enjoy and really kind of dig into and be like, wow, that was really entertaining. It was unexpected. It was kind of original. I really enjoy this film.
The one thing I'll say is that, like, it's not that it's two different movies or anything like that, but I will say that the discussions that are in the first act are not explored in the ways that you expect, which is potentially why I think many people react to it the way they do beyond even the twist.
All right, and I cowboyed up and called it a masterpiece, so I think we know where I stand. So let's get into spoilers for Arrival. I'm just gonna do the thing I do where I like say what the twist is and then we can all talk about it. So the movie opens with Dr. Louise Banks basically doing a voiceover talking to her daughter, who we see through a montage as an infant and then a young girl and then as what appears to be an older teenager dying of some sort of disease. She didn't have any hair, so it appears like it was cancer. And that's how the movie opens. And then we see the arrival happening. As Louise starts to communicate with the aliens more, she begins getting what we assume are flashbacks of her life with her daughter. Flashbacks that at times illuminate issues that she's having in the present. And then, as time goes on and more of their language is decoded and she starts being able to speak it more readily, it comes out that the power of this alien language, which we didn't even talk about this, the design of this language is amazing. I wish that we wrote in this language, this weird kind of ink brush circle that functions as an entire sentence, basically.
Did you know that the machine in the computer program in the film that breaks down the language into all of the different I guess, words that are being communicated is, in fact, a real program written by, I guess, the people that designed the language to, like, basically break down the language that they've created. They actually created this fully functioning thing.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Wait. Is it possible to go online and do this?
That's some James Cameron shit right there.
This is so much better than Navi. I would learn how to write this way.
But well, maybe that should be your new style of film reviews. It's just these weird circles.
I'll do it. I swear to God I would do it. I can't believe they wouldn't do this, but is there any way that you can go online to like a website and like make a thing out of this circle?
Not that I know of. But I know that it's a real thing. I had a conversation with the screenwriter after watching the film, and he told me about that, and I was like, yeah, I had the same reaction. I want to play with that.
Yeah, I want that real bad. I'd pay $100 for that program. Anyway.
Wow.
That's
a lot of money, Brian.
But it's super cool. That's
like movie money.
I would figure out how to write something awesome, and then I would get a tattoo. I'm serious. This language is gorgeous. Like, go online and look up just anything from the heptapod language. That's what the aliens are called, by the way, heptapod.
Now that Brian has committed to the M word, he's decided to commit to putting this forever on his body.
Yeah,
I just think that the visuals of their language are super cool. I like, even divorced from the film itself, it's still a very interesting way to get it across. And then, as we learn throughout the course of the movie, the language itself is, I think Jeremy Renner says that it's as though you were writing an entire complete sentence from front to back using both hands, meeting in the middle, and you had to know exactly how long it was, how you wanted to begin and end your thought, and then exactly how much space you would need. And
we see that kind of happen in the film too.
Yeah.
And there's also, they also write in a way that is, it's called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is basically that they see things as like time has no relevance to
right,
them.
Because the Sapir, I think the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis is the one that says that the language that you speak forges pathways in your brain. And this is the type of thing where it's believed that certain people in the world don't perceive blues as well as other colors because their language doesn't have a word for it.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
And then another one is like, we don't really have gendered nouns in English, but in places that do, like if you speak Spanish, they have gendered nouns. And so people will see something like a bridge or a chair as either inherently feminine or masculine, which is not something that we really have. And so what that means is that this language actually allows a person to begin to perceive time non-linearly. So that the flashbacks to her daughter are actually her beginning to perceive the entirety of time in a circuitous fashion. Uh-huh. So we find out that she has not had her daughter yet. She's not even met her husband yet. That, in fact, Jeremy Renner, who is a mathematician or a theoretical physicist.
Yeah, he has theoretical physicist, and he has a great introduction, which is hilarious because it's the wrong way to, it's the right way and then the wrong way to introduce yourself to someone. He quotes the book that she wrote to her, and then she's like, "Yeah, that's from my book," and he's like, "Yeah, it's wrong," and you're just like, "What?
Wrong."
Yeah, it's like, y'all gonna work together. That's a rough introduction, man.
But so they form a romance. They will eventually have a daughter, and that daughter will die. And we also learn that their marriage will not last because of her knowledge of what's going to happen to their daughter.
By the way, it's good to see he's actually a good actor when he's not a superhero.
Yeah, no kidding.
it's a nice
reminder. I mean, Hurt Locker and, you know,
remember
still.
The town and Hurt Locker?
Yeah.
Can do that.
Oh, the fucking town.
Wait, he was a superhero?
What about SWAT, guys? What about SWAT?
What about SWAT?
Oh, SWAT.
And Dan, you don't remember Hawkeye, Clint, man, whatever the fuck his name is?
Does that count as a superhero? He just has a bow.
I mean, is Black Widow a superhero?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love how
she's super sexy.
Are you saying that Jeremy Renner is not super sexy?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Man, in that like leather vest that he has with his bow. Anyway.
Oh jeez.
So yeah. That's it. That's the twist, is that this thing that we believe has happened in the past is actually in the future, and that this language has been given to us as a tool to be able to,
specifically her, because what they go into in the film, and Jeremy Renner's character is actually asking her about this kind of theory that you basically start to dream and think in the language that you start to like deep dive into. Yeah. And Louise is like, yeah, that definitely happens. And it's right around this time when the visions and things like that start to become really kind of intense for her. And that's kind of your key to basically realizing, oh, she's literally dreaming and having visions in their language, and she just doesn't realize it, right?
Absolutely.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't, as an audience, we are understanding the visual language and things like that, but we don't know what she's actually experiencing and seeing.
Because
not
she's
not
been working
actually,
on it for
actually,
like a month.
Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting because, yeah, the way they do that, it gives us all the information, and we're like, wait, is this a flashback or a flash forward? And she, the whole time, is working through that as well.
Yes. So I found this quote-unquote twist, this realignment of narrative expectation, to be very effective. And on top of just being effective emotionally, to be an interesting way to tell this story, which you believe is about this first contact, and it is, but is also about this person who now is struggling with this gift that has been given to humanity. Because the aliens 100% mean this transition of language to be a gift. That's why they landed in 12 different places, to force people to work together in it. What was that?
Or a weapon.
Well, they call it a weapon, as she rightly points out, you know, a weapon given context can be like a tool, it can be... And one of my favorite things about this movie is the way that it really explores like what language is and how different things mean different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
yeah, and you have to have context. Context is so crucial, and that's what we're kind of lacking with these aliens is context. We don't know whether weapon means tool and things like that. I know y'all just said that, but that's kind of... That's the point of this film, is without a basis of knowledge of context, language becomes very confusing as well. So
well,
even
instance,
if I have
like,
a way to talk to you, I may not know exactly what you mean, even when you say a word that I know what you mean. You know?
For instance, like I am a person who goes out and shoots guns. So when I hear gun, I instinctually think a tool, of an item. When I, if you talked to me like 15 years ago, I would have literally thought of a gun the same way that people think of like a baseball glove, because I was a competitive rifle shooter. Obviously, other people in different situations, like perhaps war, would hear the word gun and immediately think either a tool for themselves or a horrifying thing that they need to be aware of in the hands of the enemy. So mm-hmm. things like that are pretty interesting. Dan Gvozden, I know that you have thoughts on the way that this was...
On guns?
No. Well, I'm sure you have thoughts on those too. But the way that this twist was employed, and the way that this emotional narrative suddenly came to the fore at the end.
I do, yes.
And you thought,
I mean, I think,
you, much like Max Landis, did not think it was a good idea.
I mean, I think it's a good idea. I just don't think that it's earned by the film that precedes it. I think if the film was about these emotions, about this relationship, and about the interesting question of, like, you know, because she has a choice. She can have this child or not have this child, knowing the knowledge that she has, and it's shown in the movie through, like, her quoting, it's shown that she can, alter the future in the movie in a very subtle way. And so she can make this choice whether or not to have this child. and ultimately, you know, despite knowing that it will die. And it's a choice I think that we all
need to... I believe it's a she.
What? You oh, yeah, said, it is a she. It. Sorry. It. Sorry. This child is still an abstract for me.
That's because
she...
you perceive time linearly.
Yes, exactly. I think in 2016 Trump's America, it's a good question to ask, you know, like, are we, you know, and something I asked myself, you know, about whether or not I want to have a child, you know, knowing the world that, you know, ultimately I would be bringing the child into. Brian, I know you just had a child, so congratulations.
Yeah, well, we weren't in Trump's America at that point. So
yes,
but that is, it is one of those things where like people are like, well, how could you bring a child into this world? And it's like, well, you don't know what the world that the child's going to inherit is going to be. Like, I don't think 10 years ago anyone could have predicted this thing happening right now.
Actually, so, Kurt Cobain, if you guys saw that thing going around.
Kurt Cobain
said, I bet Donald Trump could be president in 10 plus years.
And that's why he killed himself?
Oh,
hey, he killed himself like 20 years ago, so he was wrong.
No,
screw you, anyway. Kurt Cobain.
In your shotgun blasted face.
You're
Kurt
no heptapod.
Anyway, you were saying, Dan?
I think these are all interesting questions, but I think if that was what the film wanted to essentially address, I think it needed to spend more time letting us know who these characters are, what their relationship to each other is, what their feelings about childbirth are. I feel like it's a beautiful coda to a different film. And at the same time, it also gives short shrift to the alien story, which is just written off. We're spending the whole time, why are you here? What is your purpose? What is your intent with us? Why are there 12 ships coming down on the planet? And it's just like, we need your guys' help for something 3,000 years from now. Don't worry about it. You'll find out in 3,000 years. You know,
noted for anyone who didn't see the movie that Dan is not speaking hyperbolically. They literally say 3,000 years.
Yeah. And to me, that's just kind of like, it's like we couldn't come up with a good reason. Like that was a perfect opportunity for this film to tie these two stories together, to come up with a reason for the aliens to be there that also reflects on our main characters and the ultimate decision that they have to make. It's just a huge miss to me. It is just shooing one story away to introduce another interesting concept. And both concepts are very interesting. But I don't, it's like, it serves the story and it serves emotion, just never together.
So here's Dan, here's my question about this whole film and kind of what is the result of this is this language, once you start to understand it, is that what actually, because it seems to me that Louise is special, that
no, it's everyone.
It's everyone. So everyone now, all of a sudden, if you learn this language, you see time in an unlinear fashion.
If you were to reach a level of fluency wherein you could think and dream automatically in that language, mm-hmm. yes, you would have that ability.
That's why she writes the book. It's to kind of spread it to the population.
And that's why she's teaching people. So so in 3,000 years, this is going to be interesting, because is everybody just fluent in the second language that I guess for a while becomes kind of – I don't even know what this – like what does this do to our own language? Like it would just eradicate our own language in a way, and it would become a universal language for everybody. It seems like.
There's can anyone remember Jeremy Renner during his voiceover says something along the lines of that this language has a special tense or something that allows it to do something else that's like beyond, it kind of gives a third dimension to our two-dimensional language, and it's not specifically related to time. I can't remember specifically what it was, though, and it's kind of annoying me that I can't.
You're talking about that scene when he has like a big breakthrough, right?
It's during the thing where they kind of do a month-long montage, and he's talking about how they named them the heptapods, and they started learning about the language,
mm-hmm.
and that their language conveys not emotion or time or something, but it has like a special tense to it that allows it to do something else. But it's not specifically related to anything that we're talking about right now, and I can't remember what it is.
I mean, what it does, and you can see on the screen, every time they pull out the heptapod's language, they have a lot of options on the screen that they can pull from that word potentially means. So yeah. everything becomes very contextual, it seems like to me, because you can see on the screen on the right, whereas the actual visual of the heptapod its symbol is on the left, and on the right you see all the English words that these words potentially mean. And what they end up doing is they basically end up picking out individual contextual words out of that language string. What and I'm then they're like, okay, like this is what they were saying.
There's some sort of tense in it that gives it a depth that goes beyond even what English is. Michael Snydell, you were going to ask Dan a question?
It's a good question what it was going to be. I guess what I specifically wanted to talk about, which you guys are getting really into intricate, you know, understanding of the language and things like that.
That's why I talked to you, because I wanted to move away from that.
Well, I guess what I'd say is that, you know, that speaking specifically to Dan's points, I mean, I think, you know, as this film reveals that what it's, you know, actually about, I mean, it's always been there from literally the first scene. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, seeing that flashback, obviously. And not only that, but we're getting a sense that, you know, there's an albatross around Amy Adams' characters, around Amy Adams' character, you know, as she's experienced some, you know, unknown trauma, to take a word someone said earlier. So, you know, it is there. So I guess what I wanted to speak about particularly is that structure. And I feel like the exact moment where this film reveals what it's actually interested in is something I find clever in the moment, but I think also speaks to a point where I became less invested. And that's the moment where it seems like we're about to spend a long time dissecting and deciphering the language. And we skip to, is it a month later? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's about a month.
So that is basically the exact moment that I said, all right, well, we're not really interested in questions of diplomacy or language or, you know, any larger questions of, you know, methodology. Like, it's, you know, in that first 45 minutes, there's a lot of questions about, you know, whether their language is totally instinctual or whether they had intentional, which, you know, comes through in the form where you're talking about how their sentences are written with both hands. Mm-hmm. or just the way that they're, you know, trying to create a set of, you know, almost keywords that could exist for all species, you know, separating and classifying into, you know, things that are needed for base survival or anything like that. And so I guess this is a long way of pointing out that, I mean, what do we think of that structural moment? Because that structural moment was the point where I said, okay, this is still this film, but this is catering to things that I'm a lot less interested in, which we can especially get into with a moment that I feel is very forced conflict, not 10 to 15 years, or excuse me, 10 to 15 minutes later in the film. So what do we feel about that? I guess that second act.
I think the structure of this film is basically that it sets up all of these complicated questions, and specifically government and how the government would react to it. I think my favorite sequence is when they basically power down all of the communication with the other 12 sites or the other 11 sites. I think that is for me the kind of real highlight of the film in what it's saying about our own humanity and how much we are willing to work with each other if we're also not willing to share each other's secrets and things like that. It becomes very, very troubling to see them shut down communication, and you see through Louise and you see through Ian how much it hurts them that, wait, we were making progress, we had a reason to communicate, and now you just shut that down. Now if any breakthrough happens, it's not for everybody, it's only for them. And so it's like all of a sudden we become very insular and we have to work twice as hard to potentially reveal something that someone else has already figured out, you know, 2 months earlier. And so that whole situation becomes very, very troubling. And I think, honestly, this film could be 3 hours long or it could be 116 minutes. And it chose to be 116 minutes because it's not about that specific story. It is about Louise, and it's about her journey in this language, and it's our kind of gateway into this language and into these alien creatures. And I think in that way it succeeds. Does it answer a lot of those questions that you probably wanted to hear? And sure, like I would love to have like a deep dive into the language, and Brian has already, you know, made his case very clear that he would love that. But you know,
$100 worth.
$100 on the table, gentlemen.
I think that's a 3-film arc. I don't think that's a 1-film arc. And for me, I always look at it like I look at books. And anytime I see a novel that is a standalone novel, I'm excited by that because I know that as soon as I pick it up and as soon as I put it down, it is one complete narrative arc. It is finished. And I think there's something beautiful to that really gets strained when you start having even a sequel, even a trilogy, and God forbid some of these book series are 17, you know, 20 books long, and you're just like, why the fuck would you keep doing that? I don't understand. I need something that I can jump in and then end, not something that I can jump in and can, you know, like Days of Our Lives, like Jesus Christ, there's like 3,000 episodes or something like that, and you're just like, what?
Why are we?
Bill, but I think what I'd say to that is, like, you know, there's a very process heavy view to the film. I mean, you guys were speaking about how it is grounded. So small scale intimate and, you know, and grounded, and that kind of goes out the window after those. You know, after those changes, and I was speaking, you know, in my first things where I was saying is, you know, it's presented in such an intellectual light that you're not bothered by the fact that all of these gears are turning to create another story. And that, like, that is what personally, I think that's a major problem with this. I've seen this film now almost. I saw it at the end of October, so it's been I've had a while to sit with it, and you know, those emotional moments, they come in just stark contrast with everything, and so that thing about the pacing, and I see what you're saying, Bill, about the fact that they are definitely folding in some of these ideas, but I still, you know, kind of lament that this wasn't. That the rest of this film doesn't get that same level of intricacy. And you know, to speak of, you know, we were talking films we could name drop to do this. So, you know, we kind of spoiled the movie a little bit by mentioning Interstellar early in this review. If we're being honest here.
I think my point about Interstellar was not necessarily what it ultimately accomplishes narratively, but more of what it tries to accomplish.
Yeah, I think
its intention is to be this emotional gut punch, which I think it falters on. I think, you know, this film definitely succeeds in sidestepping that necessity to be an emotional gut punch, and yet it still works. That's what my kind of point was. But yeah,
I fundamentally disagree with you about whether it wants to be an emotional gut punch or not. I mean, the whole end of the film is meant to be an emotional gut punch. Like,
I agree.
To me, this movie is leaning heavily on emotions as it's like soul, like the soul heart of the film. And I wish I felt like it was that throughout, because I think you're right. The 116 minutes, you know, could be expanded to 3 hours. But I think in the 116 minutes that it has, it doesn't fully flesh out the emotions it's going for. It spends so much time on this procedural, this really intricate detailing of this language, to the point that we suddenly see it in subtitles. Was a shocking moment to me, but okay. But yeah, I mean, like, to me, it just feels like it wants to do both. It didn't have the time to do both, and so it weaves in and out between the two.
But I think that it does do both. I think that you need the procedural element up front, just to sidestep. There's an episode of The Twilight Zone called To Serve Man. And it revolves around cryptographers translating an alien text. And it never... It treats language as though it's all just English. You just need to figure out the substitution, which is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that what this movie is all about is context and perspective on certain things. I mean, there are numerous times when she says that a certain word may mean something, but its root is something else. And I think that from the beginning, this movie is just trying to get the audience in the headspace of what language is, the ways it's important, and the way that it's constructed, so that by the time it comes time to really reveal what this language is doing and how it's doing it, you have a better concept of why that thing is even possible. It makes it more real instead of just, oh, we're bestowing a magical power on you now, and you can see into the future and the past on like a coaxial. So for me, it's not like suddenly, oh, she has a kid and it's dead and you're crying because that's sad. Dead kids are bad. It's all about how this person who is a part of this team, who is the person who's most attuned to what language's power and possibility are, is suddenly becoming imbued with this and having to wrestle with the implications of it at the same time that she's still just trying to do her job.
But Brian, we also have to take some things there that feel very uneasy in the overall. I mean, what do you guys haven't spoken about? So how do you feel, for instance, about like the individual flash forward where zero sum game comes from, or not zero sum? Sorry, what is the term I'm looking for here?
Isn't it a zero sum?
Non-zero sum game. Sorry.
Non-zero sum.
Well, yeah.
That or the C4 that randomly comes into the movie where they bomb it, or the random moment where Luis is then beckoned into the ship. I mean,
well, I don't think that moment.
I don't think
that C4 moment is very random at all. They're building up to it throughout.
Yeah, they seed that a lot. Now, what do you mean? Throughout? What's your issue with the non-zero sum game thing?
I think it's incredibly awkward, and I think it's borderline bad screenwriting that
really?
The only flash forwards we're getting have to be are sparsely written, but also need to have this emotional self-importance that make them feel extremely artificial. I think that.
But wait,
way that
can you explain that though? Because I don't know that I agree. She has numerous flash forwards that deal with just watching her daughter like kicking rocks and like that moment.
And she's not even the one that actually says zero sum game or zero sum theory in that moment when she's talking with the other scientists. It's actually Ian.
Yeah, but. So wait, so Michael, what are you trying to say, because I don't think that the flashbacks are in their entirety shoehorned in the way that you seem to be. Yeah, whatever. The flashes.
I'm saying,
see, it's
that...
lost again. Sorry.
Well, I mean to go back to Lost real quick. By the way, this is an exact Lost plot point. No, Desmond has something where he cycles through time. His consciousness cycles through time periods. So this is actually a Lost plot point.
But he has a present consciousness going through different time periods. Her ability to perceive, no, her perception is universal. Mm-hmm. So she is able to bring knowledge, whereas Desmond is just like, if you took me right now and started throwing me back and forth through time.
Yeah. Whereas, he, like, has a constant. Can, he has a constant. Know, but
he does those
like
things
that.
To change things in the past. You know what? Never mind. This is too much Lost talk. All right. Anyway.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to talk about Lost. what I don't understand is if... I don't understand what exactly your issue is with, like, the non-zero-sum game. Like, you
I'm
said
saying
it was...
That,
go ahead.
I'm saying that it feels like a scriptwriter trick, and I'm feeling deceived by... the way that those are deployed. I feel like
but
this
what
does
about it
to
feels
speak
like a deception.
Because they are put only because those conversations are too convenient. They are placed in such a way where it's supposed to create a larger foundation for that final scene and that final twist. But I think I can't get past that. I feel like those steps are being camouflaged throughout this movie. You know, it's a schemata that is not quite fleshed out enough to make. I think that Amy Adams is a great enough actor to make her that experience feel lived in, that grief that she hasn't experienced, that sense of longing and despair and, you know, all those combinations of, you know, feelings towards the heptapods and everything. I think that she believably and capably brings that out, but that still comes in a deep conflict with the fact that those realizations are communicated to the audience through very specific moments in the flesh forward.
Well, because the way that I read it is that she is, it's like memory. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and think about something randomly. Like, my past is going to come at me in flashes brought about by keywords and incidents and visual cues. So when she is starting to
dream in that language.
Right, well, when she's starting to understand the language and is beginning to have involuntary reactions to it, because at this point she still hasn't really gained the authority or the ability to go somewhere else on her own, she's getting memories of the future. So she's sitting in a meeting, and that meaning has a cross-temporal meaning, because that's the first time that she ever heard the term that in the future her daughter will be asking her about. And so you're not getting that just because it's a writer's trick. That's just how her brain is working.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And that's like, my kind well, but, of vision well, of like, it.
Yeah, and I think that you're right, Bill. I mean, like, if I'm sitting in a group of friends... and they say, oh, what's the name of the thing where the cell splits? In my mind, I'm going back to biology. This is why I failed science in high school. I go back to biology, and I think about the time my professor stood in front of the class and was like, mitosis is when a cell splits in half. And that's not mm-hmm. a writerly trick. That's me actually tapping into my memory to try to recall this thing that's happening. So you have to view this movie with the present, quote-unquote, scenes of the arrival in mind, not as the primary narrative of the entirety of the movie, but what is being viewed at the moment with all of her life and her daughter's life happening almost concurrently.
Mm-hmm. And that she's starting to have this more intense visions and things like that at random moments throughout the day that are spurred on by the things she hears, by the things she says, situations like that. So I definitely understand where Michael's coming from, in that it feels distracting and it feels so on the nose, but it's kind of supposed to. I don't know structurally how to get around her having these flash forward moments and it not feeling weird, because the premise is weird that she's starting to have these flash forward moments in present tense. And it's just like, what is going on? And that's kind of what you're supposed to, because, I mean, you can see it on her face. She doesn't know what the fuck is going on either. She's very confused about all of this, too.
Right. And so meanwhile, the future is cool with it.
Yeah.
Because it's the future. And by that point, she's figured out. Michael, does that make any sense?
It does. Dan, you said you've read it, right?
The book?
Yeah.
Well, then the short story?
Yeah, the short story, excuse me.
So what about it?
Is this something
How do they get around this folding the emotional and the intellectual parts of this story together? I'm kind of curious.
Well, I mean, it's very different. There's the, you know, in the short story, they don't ever actually arrive on Earth. Mm-hmm. There are 118 rooms set up around the planet where they basically have a Skype conversation with these aliens. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more abstract. So I think it kind of allows the emotion to come in like a different way. It's not like such a physical, nobody is traveling anywhere. So the whole thing is kind of emotional and abstract the whole time. So it's hard to compare the two with each other, if that makes any sense.
Do you feel like the short story worked better?
For me it did, because it wasn't interested in kind of like geopolitical global war and all of these things. It's much more interested in the emotional story and how that emotional story is influenced by this kind of sci-fi element, like I think any good sci-fi is. It's, you know, the core of humanity and how it's, you know, affected by some change in science or, you know, whatever. I think it's much more focused on that. I mean, you know, and I think there's things in this script that are like weird, you know, vestigial, you know, parts of the story that don't necessarily belong in the story. I mean, I listened to an interview with the writer and he said they brought the 118 rooms of Skype channels down to 12 ships. But like for the life of me, I couldn't tell you why there are 12 ships on the planet.
Probably
because they know that they need to talk to this one woman. So why?
I don't think they know that they need to talk to this one single woman, because as she said, like people all around the world are helping them out.
Well, yes, but they see time forward and backwards, so they would know.
But they also want one of the striking points of this movie is that they want the world to work together. They need humanity to unify. So if you talk to just Louisa Banks, she's getting her ass committed.
But they're the trigger for the world not working together.
Dan, I'm sorry. Does the world really feel right now like it's working together well?
No.
Yeah.
But this movie was made before the election.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm just
saying.
We're
living
in
Eden.
Hold on.
Trump is a snake in the garden.
Hold on. So the practical reality is that if they put this in the U.S., the U.S. would not be the only country interested and involved in this, right? So all of a sudden, the U.S., whatever it does, every move, every step is not just going to be dissected by our own country, which it is in this film, but by every single other country that has any interest in this, which I would imagine would be every country. That's why there's 12, because it separates out and it gives I think pretty much most of the superpowers are able to have a say in what they do with their own individual pod. right? And so,
although China is the only one that actually matters within the course of the film,
sure, because they are.
It's a movie. They affect
like two or three other countries as well, because what they say is basically what Russia is going to go with. And so that's kind of the key to this film, is her convincing China and Shang to not blow up the fucking things out of the sky.
Also, basically, it should be noted that Australia has some information that they're able to pass along.
Yes.
But,
I'm not sure I even want to go down this road, but, like, why not just abduct this poor woman?
Oh, my God. They need the world to work together. This is a dual-purpose mission, to gift this thing to humankind, but also to make it so that humankind understands that there needs to be a universality and a unity to everything. I would love for you to write the movie where this woman is given a space language on her own that gives her the ability to see the past and the present concurrently, and then she has to come down and convince people that that happened.
They would dissect her.
No, they wouldn't dissect her. They'd commit her and put her on Zoloft. Like, that's what would happen to this woman.
That sounds really great.
This the darkest timeline version of this movie. I think that this movie is all about concepts of non-linearity of time, which is fine, but also intentionality. And you need to be able to, in a way, like, one of the best parts of this movie for me, in terms of just its view of intentionality, is that the way that this non-linear time thinking that the language allows is something that is able to clear up confusion immediately, because so much of the uncertainty and the suspicion in this movie is based around intention. And by being able to converse with a man in both times at once, Louise is able to convince him, this Chinese commander of their armed forces, that she is in fact working towards a mutually beneficial end. Because if she were doing that in the present alone, it wouldn't work. But that she's able to do it in both, the problem of intentionality is cleared up. And that's one of the great things about this language that they've created, mm-hmm. and the way that they're able to perceive time, is that I can say to you, hey man, can you hand me that hammer? And you don't have to have a moment of hesitation wondering if I'm going to bash you in the brains with it, because you're going to be able to know, and I'm going to be able to tell you, and you can know as an absolute certainty that I'm about to hammer a nail into the ground that's going to keep your house from falling over and killing your family.
I think that's super cool, and I think that's a great concept, and that part of the movie is excellent. But so I want to make – Brian, maybe you can – you know, you're good at these kind of things. I want to take it step by step. How does story relate to the story that's in the final 5 minutes of this movie?
Yep.
How does that concept relate to this decision that she has to make?
I thought he just explained that.
Wait, which decision? Which particular decision?
Regarding her child.
Because she's going to have a child, and she knows that the child is going to die, but that's okay. Like, there is an ability to know intentionality, but then there's the ultimate unknowability of what life is going to throw at you. And this movie is about both clearing up communication is a means of allowing intentionality to be taken care of, but also the embrace of the uncertainty and the harrowing impossibility of the future of the world. I mean, the movie opens with her talking to her daughter and saying, like, I remember the beginning and I remember the end, and there are little pieces in the middle. And that's pretty much what this movie's about. This is about her beginning of her life with her daughter. This whole movie, if you wanted to break it down this way and strip away everything else, is about a woman who changes the world, translates an alien language, and at the same time has to wrestle with this new knowledge of a future for her and the life that she's going to live, and the fact that her daughter is going to pass away and her marriage is going to fail as a result not only of that happening, but of her knowing it. Mm-hmm. And that adds a level of, on an intellectual plane, interest to the story of this language that the movie is investigating. because, yeah, what if you did know that your kid was going to die that early? Like, would you still want to have them? Would that be a problem? And one of the things that people always talk about with time travel, which is not what this movie's about, but is that you know things are going to happen. And so what do you do with that? And this movie seems to say, like, you can still just embrace the moment to moment and the in-betweens. Like, the story isn't the way it ends. The story is the whole journey.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's like if you got into a doomed relationship and you're on the other end of it and you're like, would I do that again? And you've had this complicated, incredible journey with this person and maybe it didn't end so well, but you're more than likely you would probably still say, yeah, the journey, the experiences I learned from that, maybe right now it sucks, but in the future it may be something that I cherish. It may be something that I really want to hold on to. And that's kind of how she views her daughter in a way, and that's kind of a sick, you know, way to view it. But I mean, ultimately, what is life? It is a line of experiences. That's what life is. And so she's kind of saying, if I have a daughter that is doomed to die, but I still get to have a daughter, maybe that journey is still worth it. I want to swerve a little bit because
before we move off of that topic. I mean, Dan, Mike, does that sound about right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that I was emotionally moved by it,
I wasn't either. And I still really enjoyed the film. So, okay. Yeah.
I still don't think they're connected, but that's fine.
I don't understand how you can think they're not connected.
Yeah, I don't know either. But
I think they're connected. I just don't think they're well connected.
I guess I can accept not well connected more than not connected at all, because it's, to me, it feels fairly obvious that they are connected. Mm-hmm. Like she says, like the story of your life extends beyond what you believe it could be. And then she says, like, the day they arrived, that's the beginning of the story of her daughter's life. Her daughter hasn't even born yet. And that is the story of her life.
My problems are cinematic, not logical.
Right. Yours was like the writing in the scene with the thing. But I mean, like, I think once you wrap your mind around the idea of the way that she lives within this new non-temporally linear time, it makes a little more sense. I hope that I was at least able to convince you of that much, even if I wasn't able to convince you of its efficacy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. All right.
I want to mention one thing real quick before we leave. Okay. I think for me, one of my favorite moments in this film is specifically when Louise is coming back from her first trip into the spaceship and seeing the creatures, and we see her getting disinfected, and you know, these people are pulling off her suit and everything like that, and she is just out of her wits. It's so visually obvious that she just does not know how to comprehend what's happening at that moment, and that whole kind of haze follows her for the next 20 or 30 minutes in the film. And I love that it never really allows her to kind of breathe. We do get a flash forward and everything like that. There's a time jump in the film, but for the most part, while she's on this base, at least for the first 30 or 40 minutes, as we're in awe, she is in absolute astonishment of what her goal there is and everything like that. I think that's one of those moments early on that I just set up and I was just like, okay, I'm into this. Whatever journey this film takes, it's already given me that much emotional connection to her own journey that I was just in for the ride.
Okay, yeah, that's...
Can I add one little technical thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Okay, so there's this thing I call the Inception effect, where people are delivering key lines of dialogue, but you're unable to hear them because of the background music and other things going on. And this movie definitely indulges in that.
Like
there's a line early on where what is the exact line? You know, it is, because I couldn't even hear it.
Was it the one about the Sanskrit word for war?
Yes, and then the helicopter flies by, and she delivers this line, and you're like, what did she just say?
Yeah.
Did anybody hear that?
I heard that.
I heard it, but I was like, wow, that helicopter could have been brought down a bit. It was it was like a disagreement over cows or something like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, instead yeah. Of, desire yeah, for more cows. Yeah.
Desire for more cows. So just on sound, I guess, at first. We're reaching critical mass on The Nature of Daylight by Max Richter, which is a song that is basically over like the last 5 minutes of this movie. It's a beautiful song. It has been used in many films and television shows, and we're reaching a point with it where it's going to become like Where Is My Mind or Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
We've just got to stop. Like, guys, it's great. It's great, but we can't. We can't keep doing it. It's fine in this film. Like I said, it didn't distract me, and I cried during this movie, so it works. But you got to stop using it as a shorthand. You got to find another song. Retire Hallelujah, retire Where Is My Mind, and retire On the Nature of Daylight. And don't just make a slower, sadder version. Because for two of those, it's not possible. They're as slow and sad as possible. I will say this, that this movie, I went and saw it alone on Friday morning, and I told my wife, you got to see this movie. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it will emotionally devastate you. And I dropped her off to see it before her work on Saturday. So she saw it. And then 30 minutes after it got out, she had to go to her job. She has never been that mad at me before. Because I didn't tell her anything about what this movie was about. And we have a 4-month-old daughter. And this movie is about a woman coming to terms with the fact that in the future her daughter will die. And obviously, just in that way alone, it was emotionally devastating for both me and my wife. But the fact that I did it right before she had to go on a shift at work, and I was at home with our daughter, and she wouldn't be able to see her until she got off of work, she was furious. She felt as though I had done it on purpose just to mess with her. And I don't blame her. I don't blame her for being angry, but my intention was just, oh, see this, and then we can talk about how emotionally powerful it was. And instead, she was, all I want to do now is hug our daughter, and I can't, you utter, utter monster. So, and then she had to go through like 8 hours of work with this living in her brain. And we actually had that conversation where she says, like, you know, we have this baby and we're doing everything we can for her, but like something could happen in the future that takes her away from us. And there's no way for us to know. And as I said, like, you know, but that's what life is. That's the mystery of it all. And even if we knew the end and that there was nothing we could do to stop it, that's still that is still life. Like, there's no way to adjust for that. And you just have to live the middle as best you could, which, again, is pretty much what this film says. So if you're going to go see this movie, be aware and don't be careful who you spring this movie as a surprise on, I guess is what I'm saying. Because
I keep having all these Dear Zachary viewing parties and they just
like I had a friend who I once sprung Elephant on, and that went over equally as poorly. So, you know, we always say, like, you should go into a movie knowing as little as possible, but sometimes you do have to use a little bit of emotional intuitiveness and think if maybe you should at least give one little spoiler to avoid greater pain. But that is Arrival. It is out in theaters now. I called it a masterpiece. We are all generally positive on it. Dan, you're going to have to suffer from the Moonlight effect, hopefully not, but that might just happen. Where you're still positive.
I love Moonlight.
But yeah, you love Moonlight. I had problems with it. I love this movie, and you had problems with it. But in the end, both positive. Both saying people should see it. But no one will read it that way. People will tweet at you and say that you hated it. And I apologize in advance. Whew. All right, so that's it for today. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Remember to go to Mubi.com, check out their selection of fine curated cinematic wonder pieces. Man, if only I had a different language I could use that I didn't suck at. Mubi allows you to download movies right onto your tablet and iPhone and allows you to watch them on the go. There are 30 films at a time, rotating constantly, so there's always something fresh and new to watch. Remember that there's that Johnny 2 double bill that's happening right now, so if you've never seen Infernal Affairs, hop on it. That is actually what, I was just going to say, that's what inspired The Departed. My mother texted me last night at like 10 o'clock and was like, have you ever heard of The Departed? Is that a good movie? And I was just like, Mom, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, that's a great movie. How have you not seen that? And she liked it. So check out Infernal Affairs and then watch The Departed. My mother approves. That's MUBI.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial. Gentlemen, that's all for today. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time that we speak into their ears. Dan Gavazdin.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Dan Gavazdin, if you can spell my name. I'm sure it'll be in the notes for this. And I write reviews for the LA Weekly and the Village Voice.
All right, Bill Graham.
You can find me trying to figure out how to put this alien language and apply it to films that are over 2 hours on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me writing about movies on the Film Stage and FreshFiction.tv.
Michael Snidell.
You can find me having difficulty developing emotional connections to films on Twitter at Snidell. And I have a piece, or I'm going to be contributing a couple blurbs on best holiday shows at Paste. I think that comes out this week, so look for me there.
Awesome. You can find my written review of Arrival if you hadn't heard me gush about it enough already at my personal site, dearfilm.net. I also have a review of The Monster up there, so check that out. You can find me live blogging, getting a tattoo in the heptapod language that said Abbott is death process on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. And next week, we will probably be talking about the film Love Witch, unless someone talks us into doing something else. We will tweet out what our next movie is, so you can all check it out beforehand. That is all, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next week.